Welcome to the Sons of Liberty podcast, coming to you from the Liberty Tree Studio in San Antonio, Texas, where we discuss topics of the day, firearms, great food, and even better whiskey. Grab a drink, sit down with your host, the founding daddies, Mike Mahalski and Kyle Grothus.
Howdy, guys. Welcome to the SOLGW podcast. We're here with Brian from BC Precision. Am I getting that right? And Clark, who's been on before. Where are you from, Clark?
Local.
I don't know if your company name's appropriate to use on the...
Just the Clark.
The Clark.
Clark is our in-house barrel expert and precision guru that we lean on quite a bit whenever we have to do something that requires, you know, maxing every bit of precision we can out of a platform. Clark's usually the on-speed dial. So,
all right, where you want to start?
Well, I think we're going to continue part of the conversation that we had last time. If you guys have not watched the last episode where we had Clark on, we get into some of the weeds, you know, when it comes to precision and barrels and things like that. And I think we're going to continue that conversation a little bit. I think, you know, we want to talk a lot about the Six Max, in this episode, because there's a lot of I read a lot of the comments on there, and I see that the cartridge is kind of misunderstood. But before we get into that, let's start off talking a little bit, because this is something that a lot of our followers, and it's a huge conversation online, is this the topic of barrel life. Like, Clark, what are your thoughts on barrel life?
Well, maybe this is a little harsh, but generally when somebody says what's barrel life, it's kind of a bullshit question. Because how do you qualify? How do you quantify when a barrel has met the end of its life? And what is your metric for measuring that? I mean, if you're strictly about shooting groups, then maybe when the group sizes no longer produce, you know, a consistent average, right? That consistent average, or that average starts to open up, well, then maybe it's met the end of its barrel life for that. If you're a PRS shooter like me, for example, when I pull a barrel like on my 6XC, you know, generally somewhere around 2 to 2200 rounds, I see my velocity start to drop off and my extreme spread start to open up. So it's no longer at the level of competitive precision required in that game. You know, and those will all have different criteria. You know, if you're a deer hunter and your goal is minute of deer at 150 yards and in, barrel life might almost be infinite. You might never, you know, shoot that out for generations. You know, so when most people ask that question, you could virtually give them almost any answer. Because unless they're giving you a certain criteria, I need the barrel to do X, Y, and Z. How long should I expect it to last to be able to fall within those parameters?
Right. And so that's something that I find pretty interesting, because a lot of the contracts that we've done, where there is some type of objective metric to what something should do, they usually tell you what the barrel needs to be doing at the moment of testing. Like, hey, like, you know, you're submitting this rifle for some type of evaluation. The rifle must produce, you know, this group. Okay, well, so it's doing that at the onset when the barrel is brand new, but they don't ever really tell you where, at what point the barrel is going to be disqualified. Now, I think the military, like from the white papers and the military testing that I understand, when a barrel opens up to greater than 3.5 minutes, like on an M4, that's usually whenever that barrel is disqualified, right? So a 3.5-minute group, 3.5-inch group roughly at 100 yards is when that rifle barrel is, you know, shot out. I think we can ask more of these guns, right? I mean, I have a greater accuracy expectation for even, you know, for our fighting guns way under 3.5 minutes. But unless that there is some type of ceiling, like the military has a ceiling, right? 3.5 minutes. If it goes beyond that, then that barrel is shot out. But when someone asks me what's the barrel life on something, number one, I have to ask what someone's reasonable expectation of precision is, okay? Because if you're asking a Colt M4 to shoot half-minute groups, well, I mean, the barrel, the first shot out of the gate, the barrel's, shot out. The problem is, I think, too, is that I don't think that the average person understands how to actually calculate group size. We talked about it briefly on the other podcast, that you're talking about 35 five-round groups to get that 95th percentile accuracy on average, mm-hmm. right? So I don't know how many people are actually subjecting their gun to 35 five-shot groups to establish a baseline actual average for the gun. The problem is that I see is you see all this anecdotal evidence or sample sizes of one where, you know, somebody got a three-shot, you know, three-quarter minute group, and they believe that that is the precision potential of the weapon. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, Kyle, how much testing have we done for whether it's DOD ammo or law enforcement contracts? Like, what is that 64 bonded stuff? What is that?
The 64 grain bonded. I can't remember the model number on it, but I mean, that was one that we were doing for the that one state contract. I mean, we shot 10,000 rounds and we had to shoot a group every 2,500 rounds. We've done it quite a bit. I mean, for other stuff, I mean, I know the DOD stuff is even way more extensive than that. They're doing probably groups every. That you would probably know that better than I would,
right? But I'm just saying, like that 64 stuff. I mean, like that's like a 2 minute round.
Oh yeah, most of the soft point duty ammo, the 62 grain Federal, the 64, it's all. I mean, it kills good, but it's not accurate at all. I mean, you're talking minute to 2.5. Most of our groups on some of that stuff are out of 11.5 or 2.5 minutes, just because the ammo is just not accurate. It's going to do that about out of any gun.
I mean, you know, you look at some of the Frange stuff. You look at some of the other stuff, training ammo. I mean, if you're shooting a 2 minute round, then I don't think you're necessarily getting close to understanding the precision potential of your rifle, Clark. I mean,
oh, agreed. You know, and there's so many variables that go into that. I mean, it's like if you know, like an example or analogy that I saw recently that makes a lot of sense to me is if you and I both had the same car and we both went and bought brand new sets of tires, but every time you took off, you did a burnout. My tire's going to last a lot longer if I don't. Right. So how are you shooting the weapon? What, you know, what's your shooting schedule?
It goes, that
alone has huge differences.
No, it goes way beyond that from we've seen through. And again, this has been a topic that I have wrestled with for years and years and years. Like from day one, Sons Liberty has made the guarantee that if you shoot a barrel out, we'll replace it for free. Okay. But you know, we have somewhat of a reasonable accuracy requirement or precision requirement, you know, for that. And the way we generally say it to people is that whenever your group size opens up to something beyond what you find acceptable, you know, give us a call. And when I talk to people, I'm asking them, okay, so you're shooting an EOTech with like, you know, this reticle and you're shooting Winchester white box or you're shooting Monarch, you know, like, are you sure that barrel shot out? Or are you sure that that's just not the,
it's substandard, subpar ammo.
Subpar ammo, and perhaps not necessarily an
optic that's conducive to shooting tight groups at precision. Distance.
Yeah, if you're shooting a 2-3 minute dot, you're only going to be able to get 2-3 minute groups. That's just how it works.
With a 3 minute round, like at some point you have to start asking yourself some very real questions. Now, like you were saying about the tire analogy of doing the burnouts. Well, I mean, this is true for there are so many variables. Anybody that can say that they can predict barrel life, especially on like a 4150 CMV, like fighting type of barrel, I'd have to argue that I would like to see the list of criteria that they are taking into consideration. Number one, you're correct, 100%. The firing schedule, you know, is the gun, you know, doing constant full auto meltdowns, you know, like, or, you know, burn downs. That is significant. That's going to have an issue. Hmm. You know, bimetal projectiles, you know, that is going to have an issue. Is the gun suppressed? You know, we noticed that suppressed guns typically have shorter life across the board. The length of the barrel. We noticed that we're able to push longer barrels for more rounds than you can shorter barrels. Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, like how long is your barrel? So on and so forth. There is this weird doctrine on the internet that believes that a Cold Hammer forged chrome lined barrel is the pinnacle of barrel making, and that is going to give you the longest service life. And I can honestly say that from the data that we've collected, the testing that we've done, not on a sample size of one, and I'm talking about round counts that there's no individual I know of that would have invested this much time in actually burning fucking ammunition. Okay, we see overlap when the substrate material is the same. Okay, the construction method of that barrel and the QPQ or chrome line, that we see overlap in that data. And oddly enough, if you took 10 identical barrels that were made the same way, same barrel length, same treatment or coating, and you were to shoot those to failure, okay, the difference between the best performing one and the worst performing one could be, you know, 30% or more. There, if someone says, "Oh, I guarantee you're going to get 15,000 rounds out of this barrel," or 20,000 rounds out of this barrel, or 25,000 rounds out of this barrel, there is no manufacturer that I'm aware of that guarantees a minimum round count on a barrel because of how many variables go into what that actually means.
Absolutely. You know, the three things that cause wear are chemical, mechanical, and thermal. And thermal exacerbates the chemical and the mechanical, right? So the hotter we get it, like when we heat metal up, it gets softer, right? So if we do mag dumps back to back to back, you know, consistently, then we're going to have way shorter barrel life than if we have a much, you know, easier firing schedule, shoot, you know, like the age old, shoot three rounds, let it cool, three rounds, let it cool. You know, it'll greatly extend barrel life.
But what I always laugh about is whenever someone from an anonymous account drives by and says, "Well, you use the QPQ barrel and blah blah blah, you're mid tier, whatever." We guarantee that if you shoot a barrel out, we replace it. I don't know of any manufacturers that actually do that. We've been doing that since day one because predicting barrel life is so spooky, and because like we have way over 100,000 barrels in circulation easily. So we have over 100,000 barrels in circulation. The demographic that we sell guns to actually shoot their guns. And I can tell you right now, it is a lot harder than people think to actually shoot one of these barrels out. It's a lot harder than people think. I mean, we've had guns returned from, what, machine gun rental ranges?
Yeah, we just had one come back that had, like, I think 70,000 rounds from Apache Rifle Works. And to them, that was shot out because, I mean, it was probably falling at their feet as soon as it came out of the muzzle. But they said that barrel went 50,000-60,000 rounds before it even started keyhole, and it was full auto all the time, and it's got to the point where they started to notice it, and they're like, "Oh, we should probably call in the warranty on this one, get a new one."
And there's a scale of economics to this that people tend to overlook. You know, we're in a lot of times making a mountain out of a molehill. What was the cost of ammo to get it to that point?
A lot.
And how does that compare to the cost of the barrel? Right. So you know If you've shot whatever 5,000 rounds through your barrel at, so let's just say 50 cents a round, shot $2,500 worth of ammo on a barrel that I could replace for a couple, $200 or $300.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, that's another thing too. So, I mean, when I've had this conversation with professionals and we're writing a, or we're evaluating a spec, or we're, you know, we're discussing like reasonable performance expectation, one of the things that I tell people, you know, obviously depending on your individual budget or an entity's individual budget, the way I look at things is barrels, like every other part of the gun, is a consumable item, exactly. Right? And if you want to keep a weapon at optimal readiness, then you shoot it until it's no longer optimally ready, and then you replace it. Just like the tires on the race car, you know? I mean, like, you know, that's why there's a fucking pit crew. You know, if not, you would just get on the track and go stomp on the gas for the 24 hours of Le Mans and you'd be just fine. But that's not how most people looking for maximum performance in anything understand that whatever equipment you're using is to some degree, or all degree, consumable. But the thing is does one inherently last longer than the other? I will tell you this. So what we have collected from our data, your 4150 CMV, that chromoly ordnance grade steel, does, when you plot that on a graph, they are separate. Like when I said that, like chrome line, hammer forged, QPQ, 4150, you'll see some overlap between those types of barrels in construction, right? Yeah. Now, when you take an ordnance steel and then you group it, you know, on a plot with, say, stainless steel, well, then you do see some separation in those groups. It's like the substrate material of it being an ordnance grade steel made for thermal erosion resistance seems to do better than, say, a stainless barrel. I mean, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, one conversation I've had recently, I've of the opinion that a cut rifled barrel will have inherently longer precision life than a button or hammer forged barrel. Because when you hammer forge or you button rifle a barrel, you're surface hardening it. And so as that throat erodes, it flakes off in pieces, as opposed to a cut rifled where you're not surface hardening it, through the process of putting the rifling into the barrel, it erodes more evenly and consistently. So that erosion takes place at a more consistent level, right? So it extends the precision life. Now, that I'm not saying, you know, there again, what is your precision expectation? You know,
right? But for competitive precision, if you had a really, really well made button rifled barrel, yes, that's, you know, truly sub minute by our standards, and you have a cut rifle barrel that is, you know, truly sub minute by our standards, what, on average, what do you think the cut rifle barrel, we've seen this too, seems to go to keep that competitive precision longer?
Slightly longer, yes.
There was an interesting metric that I heard used, and this is from my buddy Dan Zelenka, who's like won the President's 100 several times, and this guy's a, you know, he is a true-blooded competitive shooter. He used to say that it's a dollar a shot. So if you spent, you know, is it a dollar or $10 a shot? The point was, is that it, no, is it, if you spent like $450 like on a cut rifle barrel and you spent $300 on a well-made button rifled barrel, that if he got 4,500 rounds out of that cut rifle barrel, he would get about 3,000 rounds out of that button rifle barrel. So he said it was that was the metric he used. It's like, you know, when you're buying a barrel, you're paying for about $10 a shot.
Yeah. No, just kind of side note, a real world example of that too. I like that as well is my ELR partner Ed running a 375 Chi-Tac. When you really factor all the costs associated with it, it's $9 every time he pulls the trigger. Barrel life is roughly about 650 rounds.
Jesus. Yeah. Well, that's because for ELR, time of flight is really
absolutely
your, that's your yeah. that's the you're the hill you're going to die on is time
and,
of flight.
And for those of y'all that don't know, no, Mahalski's in the 2 mile club.
I am. I am. Second round impact, baby. Yep. That was not, granted. I did have like some of the best ballisticians in the world call in win for me, so I can't take much credit for it. Although I did pull the trigger,
you did.
I had to break the shot.
Yep. Yep.
So, anyways, going back to this barrel life thing, part of why you and I started having this conversation, or people are asking, what is the barrel life on a 6 Max? And because we're achieving high velocity with, you know, certain projectiles and in certain load variants, people are assuming that the barrel life on this Max is going to be considerably less than that of a 5.56 or an ARC. And I have to tell you, I don't think that's true. And now this is where it gets nerdy, guys. Stand by. Might want to, yeah, like
put on your seatbelt.
Yeah, go get
put your helmet on.
So yeah, exactly. Right. Or if you don't like math. Now, Brian, because it's a slightly larger bore than like say the 223 or 5.56, and we're talking about pressure in there, why is the idea that a 6 Max barrel life is not going to be necessarily inherently shorter than a 5.56?
Well, it's because we've increased the bore approximately 9%, and then you look at the powder charge to go along with it. And we're only increasing that roughly on average, depending on the projectile, about 8%. So when you run those numbers, we're really on par with the 5.56. And then where we gain is we're doing it with less pressure. And if you go back to barrel life, you got heat and you have pressure and you have time of how those two variables are applied to that barrel. So when you look at that recipe, we're on par with a 5.56 and actually better because we're less pressure achieving better performance. If you match the pressures and match the steels, I would, you know, make the assumption it'd be exactly the same or slightly better with a bigger bore. You know, I think as we looked at bores, as you go bigger bore, you get slightly better barrel life. As you run from a 17 caliber all the way through a 50 BMG, you know, 308 caliber seem to shine a little bit longer just because they're bigger bore, less, you know, however that math works out.
Well, and kind of to add on to that, it's one of the big attributes of the 6 Max is a highly efficient cartridge. So comparatively, like compare that to 243. They're both 6mm bullets. Remember, 6mm cartridges, right? But the powder capacity, you know, of the 6mm Max, depending on projectile, is going to fall somewhere in that like 28 to 30 grains of powder, roughly, right? The same weight projectile out of that 243 is going to be upwards of 42, 43 grains of powder to achieve the same velocity.
because there's lots of
fishing. And I'm not saying the 6 Max can push a projectile as fast as a 243, but what I'm saying, equal velocities, equal projectile weights, takes more powder out of the 243.
Because it's less efficient.
It's less efficient. It's, and right. So that efficiency, right, lends itself to barrel life as well. Because if I'm having to burn whatever, 10% more powder to achieve the same velocity, that's that much more thermal and that much more chemical wear on the bore.
Yeah, you're literally, we're within about 130, 140 feet of a 243 in certain loads. And you look at the powder difference you have to burn to get that 130 feet is astronomical. It's the point of lost returns.
Sure. And then if you want to, I mean, you know, obviously Sons of Liberty, we're focused on the gas gun realm, you know, and we're able to push this out of a small frame AR-15, you know, where if we wanted to shoot a 243, we're having to get into the larger AR-10 guns to do that. You know, that has a 308 bolt face. And then, you know, there's other inherent issues that come with some of those larger guns. I mean, we build a very good Mark 10, which is their large frame gun. People think of those things as bigger AR-15s, but they're not. It's an entirely different animal, and I would argue that the majority of – there's the list of companies who build good 308 gas guns is a very, very short list. And so to get that kind of performance out of a small-frame gas gun, that is outrageous.
Yeah,
it's all due to efficiency.
Yep.
Taking everything to the efficient edge.
Now, another question I get too is on, you know, bolt life and things like that. Now the can either one of you guys, can either one of you explain why the 6 Max generates a little bit less bolt thrust than, say, a 6 Arc?
Well, it's simple. It's the diameter of the cartridge that generates the size of the piston. And the 6 Arc is, what, 421 or 441? Case head diameter is a lot larger, so that's the size of the piston pushing on the bolt, and we're smaller than that. We're 390, so you have a lot smaller piston pushing against the bolt face, and we have a lot more cartridge grip.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. So, like the actual surface area of the case itself in the chamber, is that going to take some of that bolt thrust off?
Absolutely.
Yep, increased grip in the chamber. Just think about the surface area of the cartridge, you know, in relation to the surface area of the chamber, right? You know, smaller diameter cartridge has less surface area.
Well, it makes...
So you have more grip. Yeah. And so that grip alleviates some of that push onto the bolt.
So you would so not only is it a stronger bolt inherently, because we're using a 378 bolt or a 556 bolt, guys, if you're not familiar with the dimensions there, it being a 378 or 556 bolt, that structural integrity of the bolt itself, its construction, that geometry makes it strong. You're also getting less bolt thrust, which should keep that bolt alive and that extractor and that bolt alive and functioning for longer.
Yeah, you can track that wear long before a failure. If you're really getting into the weeds on looking at your bolt, you can track peening, you know, the actual movement of metal on the bolt and the extension. There's telltale signs that trouble's coming, and you just don't see that with our gun.
Yeah, and I've noticed that too. So the idea that the Max would accelerate barrel wear, that is simply just not true. Like shot for shot with 5.56,
yeah.
Depending on the material of the barrel, right? Because yeah. we have, so guys, there's a video. By the time this podcast is released, y'all should have seen the video on our social media of us doing some velocity testing against 5.56, and then also some full auto testing. When that video comes out, you know, or when this video drops, that should already be out, so you can take a look at it. But like, you know, our vision for this cartridge is not just the precision and PRS and like that, you know, the competitive side. You know, when we're talking about increasing the lethality of the platform, we're also talking about this cartridge in shorter guns and work guns. And so we have barrels coming that are made of ordnance steel for this caliber to, you know, legitimately extend barrel life because we're making it for high round count guns. I mean, how long are we out on some of those samples and some of that stuff we can be able to start showing people?
On the 6 Max? Yeah. We should start having barrels for sale here, I'm hoping, within 2 weeks at the longest, if not sooner. And it'll probably be 14 5s and 20s first, and then 16s and 18s the week the next week. So,
but as far as that ordnance grade steel, like your 4150, your 821, things like that?
Probably a little longer out. I think 821 will be first. That'll be, I think that's the way to go on that. So, but you get the accuracy of stainless with the life of a chrome moly barrel. So it's going to be,
yeah, neat. And it's inherently a corrosion resistant material. I mean, because it stays stainless even after carburization. I mean, it's a pretty neat stuff. And then there's some processes for how you finish that thing. And it's an amazing material. But that's a whole other podcast we'll talk about some other time. another question I get on the 6mm Max, and again, let me make this clear before I ask this question to our viewers. There are things that we develop that, like when we make an SL patrol rifle, we are trying to make the best rifle for the money, and so someone can have a legitimate endurance fighting gun on a budget. And that's where our SL patrol comes in, right? You know, we have XO3s where if somebody wants a full length rail to mount a sling and a flashlight, like, you know, we can make that rail cheaper because it requires less machining. It's a different extrusion. There's a different lockup, yada, yada, yada. Some of the stuff that we make is not meant for being budget. Like it was not developed for people that are counting pennies. Some of the stuff that we developed was developed to maximize the performance, to give you the absolute most performance, and it cost what it cost. Like an L89 drive lock rail with cable management systems and titanium barrel nuts and all that kind of stuff, like that is not a budget rail. We didn't build it to go on, you know, a budget rifle. We built that thing for people that are wearing $30,000, $40,000, night vision devices, and they're using a $4,000 laser on the gun, and they have, you know, perhaps a $100,000 iNod, you know, hanging off the thing, right? So we didn't build that rail like for someone who's on a budget. Okay, the 6mm Max, one of the things that I hear a lot about is, well, what's the price of ammo, or the ammo is gonna be more expensive than 5.56. Well, fuck yeah, it's going to be more expensive than 5.56. Number one, it's a cartridge that's never fucking existed before. It's giving you 42% more performance than a 5.56 out of a small frame gas gun on the same fucking platform, okay? And we don't have 60 years of, like, NATO, you know, supporting the cartridge. So, yes, the 6 Max cartridge is going to cost a little bit more than the 5.56. It is also going to fucking outperform it in every capacity, okay? So if you're looking for the cheapest thing to go shoot next weekend, it ain't going to be the 6 Max. With that being said, what are we doing to bring ammo cost down for plinking ammo, Brian?
Well, we've got a couple of manufacturers on board who have just said they got basically a 1 MOA bullet, and they can produce it a whole lot cheaper. So when that goes into the factory making ammo, it's going to bring the price down. We're shooting, you know, the cost of a bullet is really the cost of ammo. The primer, the brass, the powder, those are all, you know, those are all known quantities. It's the projectile you stick in it is where the money's at and what makes it cost so much.
So I think what Brian's trying to say is that, and this is something, that, you know, I don't know if people realize, we have collectively as a team here partnered up with a major ammo manufacturer who's going to be producing this at the industrial level. Is that correct?
Correct.
That is correct. That is probably going to bring the price down of you working around the clock. You know, well, let's just be honest. It's economy of scale, right? If you're buying 10,000 projectiles at a time, that is going to be significantly more expensive than if you bought, let's say, 1 million projectiles at a time. Correct. Or, you know, if you're forming 10,000 pieces of brass, that is going to be more expensive than if you're forming 1 million pieces of brass per piece, right? So when you scale this fucker up, the cost should come down.
Yeah.
And even right now, for the cost that you're selling it for, is still in line with the box of ARC.
Correct.
So the 6mm Max ammo is not more expensive than 6mm ARC ammo as of today.
Correct.
Now, what's that going to look like? I don't know. Once this economy of scale kicks in. Furthermore, there are full metal jacket plinking rounds in development.
Correct.
So someone will be able to go out and train even on these short fighting guns for less money than just saying going up and burning up match ammo.
Yeah, you'll get close to the same performance. Then when you switch to the premium Pro Joe, you'll get the hyper accuracy.
So I guess if somebody is using, I don't know, 77 grain Black Hills, 77 grain Black Hills 5.56 match ammo. Roughly, how much is that a box?
The price gone up and down with the last couple of years, but it's close to $1 a round right now, I think.
Okay,
and that's a 5.56.
Right. So I'm just
60
saying,
years behind it.
Right. So, so I don't know how many people go out and train with their Black Hills, but you know, I know that some of the ammo that I put, like, I have 70 grain TSX in my gun. So, like, the gun that's by my nightstand that, you know, if Cletus wants to come fucking try his luck, you know, one night, you know, I have 70 grain TSX in my gun. That is not cheap ammo. I mean, that is a box of real TSX is not cheap.
No.
So, I guess it depends. Again, what you're willing to pay for what level of performance and what level of results. So, but the 55 grain Plinker ammo should obviously be less expensive than.
Correct.
So we're talking about having this ammunition down into a fairly reasonable price range.
I would see it under $1 a round.
Under $1 a round.
Yeah. I would say right at $1, potentially just under $1 a round would be a realistic number.
There's a guy right now somewhere in his basement punching his computer screen angrily because you said that. he doesn't know what he's going to fucking do. He doesn't know what kind of shit he's going to talk on the comments. Is it mom is very angry? Get your meatloaf. No, but here's the other cool thing, and this is something that I've observed as well, right? We don't get any pushback or negativity from people who actually know what the fuck they're talking about. There are people that look at it with some kind of skepticism, like, I'd like to see, you know, how it does in this configuration. I'd like to know what it does. What are the velocities you get in here? You know, what are you seeing in terms of BC on this? You know, what's ammo availability going to look like, right? Can I walk into like a premium gun shop in my city and buy it? Because here's the thing, I'm not sure you can walk into Academy and buy 300 PRC ammo right now. Can you?
I've been looking.
I mean, so PRC, so yeah. 300 PRC is a popular mainstream cartridge.
It's increasing in popularity. Yeah. But
you can't necessarily walk into your hardware store and find it mm-hmm. all the time. Right. I mean, you know, that's one of the arguments I used to make about why I still carry a 300 Win Mag is that, like, if I got to Montana and I realized that I left my damn ammo at home, you know, there's probably some on the hardware shop store, you know, on the floor.
Safe bet. Yeah.
But there are a lot of really good cartridges out there that are not necessarily available at every single retailer that sells cartridges,
mm-hmm.
you know? So what is the plan for how we're going to get this out there? I mean, do you see 6-Max ammo being available in, like, more of your premium gun stores that carry Sons Liberty?
Yeah, I do, because who we've joined up with is going to take the reins, and they're in charge of distribution and manufacturing, I mean, the whole nine yards. So it's going to be a major impact for 2024.
So not only is it available through you direct, you know, and we're going to have links to that on our site to be able to go find ammo. And right now there's no shortage of ammo. And then this is before this other production kicks in. I anticipate that where these rifles are sold, ammunition will be available. I mean, we're not going to sell you a car with which there's no fucking gas. That's Tesla's job. You know, kidding. I mean, Musk actually has a pretty good infrastructure. I'm a big, big Musk fan. If you're listening to this, Elon Musk, by some miracle, like, I want to talk to you about partnering up. I could use your, no offense, Kyle. Like, you've been a great partner, but Elon.
Can we tag it?
Yeah. I make that joke about Elon Musk, not because he's, like, one of the richest guys in the world. Like, if there was an opportunity for a dream partner, it has nothing to do with the capital. It has to do with his access to material science, mm-hmm. you know? Because there's no real money in the gun industry. There's really not. There's not, like, a huge concentration of wealth in the gun industry. We're, like, 30 years behind material sciences from other things, right? If you're looking at launching something into space, in the kind of money you're willing to spend to make something light and the kind of money you're willing to spend for thermal erosion resistance because the fucking thing you shoot into space has to come back. The level of money they're willing to spend in materials R&D, like, that's why I would love to pick this dude's brain about, you know, how do we make a suppressor that has the weight of titanium with the thermal erosion of Inconel? Like, that would be a cool... I guarantee you, fucking, you know, they probably have it somewhere. I guarantee that alloy exists somewhere because it's expensive to put weight and mass into space.
Unobtainium.
Yeah. Hey. Exactly.
But you know, and all think about how much we've advanced just in the last 10 years alone.
Oh yeah.
And the industry as a whole, you know, the weapons, the optics, the bullet design and construction. I mean,
if 10 years ago, if you were to say that a cold bore 2,000 yard shot is becoming, I'm not going to say necessarily routine, but it's cold bore 2,000 yard shots are obviously very doable, mm-hmm. right? Would that have been true 10 years ago? Mm-hmm. So think about that. So you have a cold bore and you're able to calculate the conditions, calculate all the variables, get a ballistic solution and make a first round cold bore impact at 2,000 yards. 10 years ago, that would not have been, there would have been a lot more luck involved, I'll tell you that.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
They've done it in competition. Like where it counts, right? Yes. Where there's someone's recording this. Mm-hmm. It's on the record. Yeah.
Yep.
So I mean, yeah, the it's been very exciting. Hell, just in the last year, some of the stuff I've seen come to bear. I mean, we have had Sons of Liberty's had a very exciting year bringing new product to market that I think people are gonna be really excited about. The 6 Max obviously be one of them. Like the 6 Max, the 6 Max would render the 5.56 obsolete if there was magazine availability. And if you had ammo availability, performance-wise, this would render the 5.56 obsolete.
Yeah, I would say that's one. It was designed for that, and that's going to be the ultimate goal. You know, when it gets adopted as a new GI carry, I think that'll be a reality. Once they spool up, I mean, you basically are bridging the gap. You've added 40% lethality to the GI. We've got, 70 million new SIG Tango T6 scopes. You know, when I trained, you know, you're looking through ghost ring sights, and we shot 300 meters. Now they get a 1-6 LVPO, and I don't know what they're training to, you know, but it's a lot further than 300 yards. And now with this cartridge and that platform, they can do it. There's no extra training. They look through that glass, and you hold this dot, pull the trigger, you're gonna hit that IPSC out there. Or your target at 600 yards, with the energy of to do what it needs to do. So
that's the thing. Whenever we talk about increasing the lethality of the platform, I don't think most people understand exactly what that means. Like, yes, they can conceive of a heavier piece of a heavier mass at a higher velocity striking a target, and then there's a certain kinetic energy transfer to target. And there's that, but when we're talking about increasing the lethality of the platform, you're also talking about like increasing hits, right? So what I guess what I'm saying is if you have a bullet that is traveling, I don't know, 400 feet per second out of the same length barrel, same, you know, weight projectile, you're extending that max point blank, right?
Yeah. And yep. So and you and I talked about this recently, the technical term for it's called danger space.
Danger space.
So let's say that the vitals area, right, my target area is, let's just say, 10 inches, right, 10-inch diameter area. So by increasing velocity for a same weight bullet, I have now increased the distance, and we'll use yardage as the measure for this, to where that trajectory of that bullet does not rise above or fall below that 10-inch space. So now I've extended that envelope. So that allows me to... I don't have to have as I've got more error in my yardage estimation.
Right. So to translate that just into simplicity, like as far as your point, put the dot on the target, pull the trigger, that you, number one, you've built in a lot more forgiveness mm-hmm. to like
absolutely
which, the range estimation.
Which your range estimation, you should increase hit probability in the vitals where it makes a difference when you're out there shooting those deer or whatever you might be shooting at. Okay. And basically, you've extended the distance to which high probability hits can be had.
Yes, you've increased hit probability.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so when we talk about increased lethality, it's not just what the bullet does to a target. I mean, like, you know, I have a lever action 500 Smith & Wesson that I play with. It's a cool toy. I kind of want to take it, you know, bear hunting. I would imagine that hitting something with that would be quite lethal, yeah. Right? But that is not necessarily that doesn't translate into a gun that you're going to carry for fighting.
No,
you know. So, increasing the lethality also has to do with, can you put rounds on target? And I believe with this, a little bit flatter trajectory, higher velocity, higher BC, it builds in forgiveness where your hit percentage should go up. And what's cool is when you do hit the fucking thing, you're hitting it with a lot more authority.
Yep, increased penetration, yeah, increased kinetic energy.
It's a force multiplier for general carry. And then when you put it in a, you know, in the SOCOM arena, it extends that envelope. You could go out with two magazines, one with a 55 or 50 grain projectile, whatever the flavor with the light tungsten dart, and you can extend that range of what armor piercing round can do. And then you can go on the other end, you change the magazine out, you can load a 103 or a 107 in it, and now you can really get serious about Overwatch in the same gun. And the same recce gun now goes from I'm destroying hardened targets to I'm taking guys out way beyond 600 yards in a 1,000-yard range in the same gun with two different magazines.
Yeah, that's one of the things I've been trying to explain to people. Like, if you want to compare it to 5.56, in my opinion, like, performance-wise, there's no comparison. If you want to compare it to something in the ARC, okay, yes, the ARC delivers ballistic-similar performance, right? You know, the ARC can actually push a slightly heavier projectile. They're up to, like, 109s or something, right, 110s. So the ARC can push a heavier projectile, and the velocities on the ARC compared to the MAX are pretty similar. The difference is that the MAX doesn't have the same mechanical problems that the ARC currently has. Okay, now there are companies that are working really hard to try to overcome those mechanical deficiencies. I mean, we have an Aramet bolt coming out for it. That's how much of a real problem that bolt design is. With that being said, man, I mean, like, I'm not aware of any 10.5, 11.5, you know, ARCs out there that are getting run hard. Now, we can take a MAX and run that fucker as hard as an M4. Like, the ARC, from my understanding, even the most current, neat, wild-ass idea iterations that are floating around out there, they can't do it. And we certainly can. The other thing, too, is that as of right now, until some of those problems get fixed, we can load to higher pressure, or the load can be loaded to higher pressure because of the bolt design and the bolt thrust.
Absolutely.
Yep. So that's something that is a legitimate advantage. So, I mean, what's, again, going back to the conversations that we've had with folks, you know, how much they're going to cost, where can I find it? Well, we're working on it. <You know? laughs> I do anticipate, like, you know, availability going through the roof. I anticipate prices coming down. And for the folks that are on the fence about it, like, I would look at the data of what it can do. And if you understand what you're talking about, it's going to be a pretty damn hard cartridge to beat. And I don't get discouraged by the comments, because I realize, like, you'll see. In my mind, when I read a comment about the MAX that, you know, is something like, you know, disparaging or skeptical, oh, another Wildcat cartridge. I'm like, okay, well, one of us is right, and you'll see. And that's it. And I go, I roll back over and go back to sleep. You know,
but everything started off like that at one point.
Wildcat kind of went out the window when we went to the lab and did the semi ballistic data testing on it. Wildcats have no data behind them. They're just fill the case with powder and whatever happens, happens, and look at the primer and measure it. And we're years beyond that. We've gone to the lab and proven ourselves out.
I'm really glad you brought that up, because this is not I would not call this a Wildcat cartridge. A Wildcat cartridge is something that somebody made in their fucking garage, and they're, you know, they're shooting a local match with it, and the only way to get ammo for it is if they're sitting there trimming brass and, you know, blah, blah, blah. That is not what this is.
Correct. It's way beyond that.
Okay. Okay. I mean, we just happen to be first. Yeah. You know, that's it. We just, you know, this is, I believe it's going to be as popular as any other cartridge designed for high performance.
I like to tell guys a simple way to boil it down. The Mark 262 round was kind of the evolution, the last of the evolution of the 5.56. And that's what everybody gauges performance on. It just wrecks shit, is the best terminology. Well, take that round and add 400 feet a second to it. That's now you're on par with the MAX.
Yeah, I hope that people go and watch the videos that should be out by the time this airs of us shooting with the Garmin Kerno, and, you know, the numbers don't lie. And again, if you understand performance, if you understand how to, you know, this should be quite compelling. Now, the people that are just like, ah, fuck you, well, I'm not going to be able to change your mind, but we're happy to sell you MAX guns and ammo in a year or two whenever you realize that you were wrong.
I was going to say one thing I was I forgot to mention. We were talking about the availability on the barrels, something that did slow it down as we decided to do custom barrel extensions for all of them. That's something we didn't have when we were testing. We were using standard 5.56 barrel extensions. And we basically decided doing it with a wider feed ramp that should solve any issues with the longer projectiles, you know, the 103s and the 105s. And we'll also probably start using those on our 300 blackouts and 6 arcs and stuff like that, because it's basically an AR-10 feed ramp on a 5.56 barrel extension. So you're getting a lot more room for the projectile to go up without hitting anything or snagging or getting deformed or anything like that. So
absolutely
should add reliability of the platform quite a bit as well.
Another thing I wanted to hit on was, again, you kind of touched on it a second ago, Brian, but the range of ammo from 55 to 107s, like, what are some other loads that you've played with in between there?
The 90s, God, we've hit them all in the lab. We hit just about every projectile there is on the market. And if we didn't test it, it's because it wasn't available at the time because of, you know, COVID and other factors. And as they become available, we start playing with them.
Yeah, yesterday I got to shoot some 62. Got to shoot some
62 grain frangibles, yeah.
Yeah, we've got played with 55s, 58s, 62s, 65s, 77s, 87s, 80s. 90s.
We've got 103s,
105s, and 107s.
The lab data available, yeah, for 55 grain, 58 grain, 65 grain, 70 grain, 75 grain, 80 grain coppers, the new CX, 85 grain spear, 87 grain burger, VLD, 90, all the 90s. There's a ton of 90s, the Lapua, the ELDX, on and on, you know, 95 grains. I mean, we hit every, you know, all that load data has been tested out, pressure tested, and available for, you know, if you want to load this round.
Yeah,
there's flavor, just like why people love the 243, because it shoots the 5.56 all the way up to 100 grain. Well, now we're up to 107 grain, and it's like, what do you want to do with it? There's a recipe for it. Load it and go do it.
Wow.
And we're offering 4 factory loads, and we'll probably expand on that. I think I'm going to throw the 103 in the mix, since it's just proved itself out on the Ayler 89 at 1,000 yards. It is a happy bullet. Hornaday hit a home run with that bullet.
They do those varmint grenades.
And the varmint grenades. Yeah. Those, we're shooting those. Yeah, 62 grain varmint grenade, just under 3,500 feet per second in a 20-inch barrel.
Well, I mean, Russo and Steffens have demonstrated what that 103 out of that Max is going to do.
And then Ray shot the 90 grain Lapua out to 1,300 yards at the Snipers Unknown, which blew my mind. I had no understanding of the distances they were shooting. I thought it was, you know, like 1,000 and then. He said, no, there was a target out there at 1,300 yards, and we whacked it 10 times. I'm like, holy crap.
I want people to understand why Brian's impressed with that. It was because, like, you know, that was a target in a stage
for
a competition. People don't realize how far you can shoot things.
Yeah.
So we have a we have a buddy, Chase Stroud. He was one of the guys that helped me get on at 2 miles. Is that 375 lethal? Well, it wasn't the only one. I think they called it a 375 lethal at the time.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. Okay. About an 8-second time of flight, too. I mean, I think you could pull a trigger, smoke, light a cigarette, you know.
Have a sandwich.
So my buddy, Chase Stroud, and you know Chase, he's an ELR guy. Like,
I've met him.
I have videos of him. I have videos of him shooting, you know, AR gas guns out to a mile, you know, breaking cinder blocks out to a cinder block. You know, we're not talking about the side of a fucking barn.
Yeah.
A 5.56 gun, like, out to a mile. Like, so, you know, if you don't think 1,300 yards is very far, trust me, that gun, I guarantee you, will engage or hit targets way beyond 1,300 yards. You just typically don't see them in a stage at a match or, you know, small frame gas guns are used. But the fact that he would have won that match if not for a time penalty, right?
Yes.
Yeah, that was a different match. Yeah.
Oh, that was the
last one. Yeah. He crushed everybody. I mean, by minutes, and then he got a 60-second penalty, which still didn't take him out of first place for gas open.
Right.
And he would have taken first place overall, which is, it doesn't matter what gun you bring, I beat you.
Yeah. By the way, like the guy that took first place overall is our good friend Scott Peterson. So I'm not taking any of the wing away from Scott Peterson. Congratulations on your first place win. He's a good friend of ours. He shoots a max as well. Not in that competition, let me be clear. But yeah, without that 60-second penalty, Helms would have won first place overall for the whole thing.
Crushed it.
Yeah. And that's the cool thing. I mean, the six max really made its debut at the Quantified Performance Championship. And we took we took open and general purpose.
General purpose.
Then Peterson took first for the championship with practical. And he would have shot his max that day. But I think his gun was actually where we discovered that we should probably slightly open up those feed ramps a little bit.
Yeah.
But I mean, his gun on performance wise was fucking lights out. So that's not a bad place to make your debut.
Yeah,
it's pretty ballsy. We nailed it. It's like, here it is.
Dude, I was hoping for that Ford versus Ferrari moment where like all three come across the finish line at the same time. I mean, first place, general purpose, first place, open. And then, of course, you know, Scott shot a 260 in that one, but we would have had it.
Yeah.
Not bad. Okay, so the other question I get all the time is, when are these things going to be released? So we will have loose barrels for sale. I think that primarily though, one of the first ways to get one of these things is going to be like complete upper halves. Kyle, what's your plan on how we're going to make these available?
I mean, the plan, as soon as we get barrels, we can start getting everything from guns to uppers and everything out. I mean, we'll probably make them available to, I'd imagine probably uppers and guns dealers first, but I mean, I'd say we just get barrels. I know we got a line out the door for guys for all three, so yeah. We got a lot of barrels in order. So I'm hoping they start rolling in next week, and we can start getting them up there. And we're gonna start adding more barrel lengths. That'll be the other thing too. Probably in the next few weeks, we'll add shorter barrels. I know we've been playing around 12 and a halfs and stuff like that. So we'll have a, for those of y'all gonna be a media range day at SHOT. We plan on having a 12 and a half out there. Just because it's a short range, I think it's only 50 yards. We're like, there's no point in bringing out a 20 and breaking all their steel targets. So we'll be out there at the 12 and a half if anybody wants to come out and shoot it.
My 12 and a half is still a thumper. So yeah, 12.5. Down the road we'll have 11.5s. I do see a role with this cartridge in even your more defensive type of guns. And you know, if you were picking a loadout for a task, you know, and the rifle is as reliable, mechanically reliable as a 5.56, why would you not want to put a lot more ass behind it? You know, and no, this doesn't mean I'm throwing away all my 5.56 guns. I'm not going, you know, I'm not throwing, because like, obviously if the aliens land tomorrow, you know, like, I want to be able to find ammo laying around.
Sure.
Wasn't sure there'd be plenty, but like, I guarantee you that fucking opening salvo will be with six max. You know, until I burn up my six max ammo, I'll probably switch back over to the 5.56 if the aliens are listening. Anyways, Clark, do you have anything on Precision Man or Barrel Life or anything that you wanted to touch on? There's no time limit. We all sit here for 7 hours and do this. Curious. Like, you know, I know we've kind of gone.
We can talk forever. No, it's like I said, we kind of harping on it because it comes up as a question all the time. What is barrel life? And my immediate response is, well, what do you need it to do? You know, what is your precision expectation? You know, and I think it's such there's so many variables involved in that it's almost an impossible question to answer.
It's a bullshit question.
You know, it's a bullshit question. You know, now, not that there aren't scenarios, and I know I always harp on the PRS stuff because that's what I've probably got the most experience in as far as competitive shooting goes, but when you have a large group of individuals all shooting the same or similar cartridges, all shooting, you know, a certain selection of barrels, then you kind of can generally gauge what barrel life's going to be, but the variables are minimized in those scenarios, right? So, like for example, you know, Six Creed became very popular for a while, and most of the hardcore competitors that were shooting Six Creed were replacing their barrels somewhere between 1,100 and 1,300 rounds, right? And it's because it was no longer at the level of competitive precision required for that discipline. Not that it still wouldn't be a viable hunting barrel for the next generation or two, you know, but that goes back to shooting schedule again. You know, if you're on a stage, if you're shooting, eight to 16 rounds on a stage, you know, 200 rounds in a 2-day match, 100 rounds in a 1-day match, and you're shooting, you know, X number of matches a year, you can go through that pretty quick. Most people realistically don't ever shoot that much.
See, I think you made a good point. Like, well, you made a great point. I mean, you always do. But to continue on one of the things you were saying, when you start eliminating certain variables, then your predictability of things starts to go up, right?
Exactly.
So if I knew that barrel X, okay, is a 14.5 barrel, it's made of this material, it's going to be using this suppressor, and this is the ammo that it will be fed its entire life, then you could probably start making some better guesses as to what that thing's going to do. One of the problems that we have whenever you're fielding weapons to the general public is you don't know which suppressor is going to go on or if they'll ever see a suppressor. You don't know what the firing schedule is going to be. You don't know what ammo it's going to be used. You don't know what that person's cleaning regimen is. So whenever you start asking about barrel life, like, what is barrel life to you? You know, what I should say is, what is barrel life with the set of circumstances that you're giving me? You have to give me a little bit more information with your question. You know what I'm saying? Like, the predictability of performance goes up with the more information that I have. But if you're saying, what's barrel life? Well, fuck, I don't know, man. What's tire life? You know, what's the human lifespan? You know, like, you know, do you smoke 4 packs a day and, like, you know, do heroin in a fucking alley? Well, it's going to be a little bit less. Okay. Then, you know, David Goggins. Well, so, you know, what are you asking?
Well, and to throw something in there, just one minute variable in the overall scheme of things, but, you know, do you have a shitty cleaning rod of jointed sections? And did you, you know, bang the crown, or did you bang the you know, where it steps from the end of the neck up into the throat area with that rod over and over, and you did damage to that area, and now your precision has diminished as a result to a mechanical change you made through improper cleaning or crappy equipment to clean with? You negatively impact that outside of that? Had nothing to do with actually shooting it. You know, and it happens more often than you think. You know?
Let me ask you, on the better precision barrels, what do you normally, like, on your top of the line precision barrel, the difference between a cold bore shot and, you know, a warm bore shot? Like, what is the point of impact difference you normally see? I mean, or where do you want to see that? Is it within a minute?
Zero.
Yeah, it's negligible on most. I mean, there are some times where barrels are their own island, and they take a shot to warm up. It could be environmental inside that barrel. It could be a lot of variables, but typically their cold bore, hot bore makes no difference. Yeah. Because there's no stressors in that barrel.
So on a well-made bore, well-made barrel, you should see minimal, if any.
If any.
Correct. Point of impact shift.
Yeah, correct. I can take my old Mauser 30-06, my favorite gun, out of the safe. Like, I took it down to SSD, 2 months ago, and took one round out and shot it 500 yards and put it on the dot where I wanted it, put it back in the bag. I'll see you in a couple of years, sweetheart.
You know, and that's something I wanted to bring up that Brian reminded me about. You know, let's talk about the deer hunter for a minute.
Okay.
If you're a hunter, right? Bigger game. I'm not talking like your varmint hunters necessarily, right? But, you know, if you're going to go out and you're going to shoot a deer, or you're going to go out and shoot a black buck or an axe or whatever the case is, if you're really going to do yourself justice, you need to go to the range and fire a single round. Did it hit where you needed it to hit?
Yeah.
If it didn't, then make an adjustment, come back a day later, and shoot a single round. Because you don't warm up the barrel when you go deer hunting. Right, mm-hmm. It's only the cold bore shot that matters. So you should orient everything based on that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's not like, oh, a deer walked out. Hold on, bang, 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 bang. Okay, now I'm warmed up. It's grouping. It's shooting where I want it to shoot. Now let me place a shot on the deer. That's not realistic.
That's a pretty ballsy deer. You know, standing out
you
there.
Know, so you know, orient everything to your intended task. You know, if I'm a group shooter, then that's the only thing that matters. If I'm an ELR shooter, everything matters. You know, if I'm a deer hunter, the cold bore shot matters.
No, 100%. 100%. I mean, like, again, like I said, like, the barrel life question has a lot to do with what is your realistic precision expectation, and you know, where is the upper limit of that, right? So I mean, you know, if you submit a weapon and it must perform X during the testing, how long will it maintain that particular group size, and at what point and how far can it exceed that before it is no longer viable for that role? Those things should probably be defined. You should probably have that defined in your head as an individual as to what, you know, what that, what the high and low end of what that looks like. And if you're being very honest with yourself and you were to do this over a large enough sample sizes of group sizes, over a large enough sample size of ammunition types that you're subjecting it to, and then how you're deploying that gun, it would help people, I guess, understand what they're doing a little bit better. I mean, you know, you just, I can tell you, well, that's one of the things that's frustrating. There's, I've had people call us up and want to return barrels because, or return a gun because their group size was terrible. And you talk to them for a little bit, and I let people send us back stuff all the time. For no, we have a no questions asked policy. Like, hey, you want us to take a look at something? Just send it to us. No questions asked. We will take a look at it, and then we'll have our guys, you know, Preach or Lloyd or myself, or then you've even shot a few, where we'll go out there and we'll shoot this thing to try to recreate the issue and see, you know, what they're doing. And if you're complaining that your Monarch group size is outside of your liking, like that's not my fault. Now, we have had a legitimate issue where I think there was like a, there was some type of damage to a crown, or there was some other kind of defect that we've seen like once before. And that was legitimately our fault. We shot it. We could recreate it. We're like, hey, something's clearly not right here. And, you know, we, no questions asked, replace the thing and send it back. Hell, we replace things that people destroy. But again, if you're looking for, if you're looking to at least set a baseline for the precision expectation of this gun, set yourself up for success. You know, perhaps mount an optic on there that's geared towards precision and shoot ammo out of it that is kind of geared towards precision, and at least see what the baseline capability of the platform is before, you know, before you get disappointed.
Yeah. I mean, even in all the testing and everything that we've done, you know, even if I'm shooting a 10.5-inch 6 Max, I've still got a 25 power optic on it.
Yeah,
well, quality, you know, a high end quality optic, because I need to remove that as a variable. I'm not saying it's high quality because I'm priced. It's high quality because it's been tested and vetted, right? I've ruled that out as a variable. It's a proven optic.
Yeah, and then one thing that we do, I don't think most people do, is when they're shooting a group, they're literally, their optic is, they're aiming for that group. Well, you're distorting your impact area, so now that becomes a variable in the group. So aim off, you know, and yeah, and let the group fall somewhere off of your aim point. So your aim point's the same every time. No, most people don't do that.
Yeah, if you just simply take your scope and let's say you adjust it so it shoots 2 or 3 inches to the right or 2 or 3 inches above where your aim point is, and you focus on that aim point only, right, it's much more exacting.
Yeah.
Because one of the things that we have a tendency to do is called wishing it in. Like, say we put 4 shots together, like, oh, I've got a good group, and then that 5th shot's a flyer. A lot of times it's just psychological, right? Yeah. Whereas if you move it kind of off to the side and you just have a hyper, you know, fixate on that aim point and holding as consistent an aim point as you can every time, and you take the disparity of the group out of it, then you're going to see a true representation of how that of the level of precision that rifle can produce.
Yeah. No, that's, and yeah, that's, don't obliterate, and that's a your psychological aim point. Confirmation of what you're doing. And, yeah, and then obviously you bring the gun on zero, you know, and then you don't worry about it. You know, no, you know it's holding MON. You go do your deal.
Yeah, because you see it all the time. It's like somebody will show a picture of a group, of a nice little tight group, and somebody will always comment, well, yeah, but you didn't hit the bullseye. Well, no, that wasn't the point. I was testing the precision. You remember, like we talked about in the last podcast, precision is putting all your rounds through the same hole. Accuracy is putting the hole where you want it on the target.
Right.
Right. So in this case, we're just testing for precision.
Yeah.
By the way, how do you pronounce it? Is it Kaylee's or Collie's?
I say Collis.
Collis.
That's how I've always said it. Yeah.
Collis.
I don't know if that's right.
I have been saying it wrong for a very long time. Mr. Collis, I'm sorry.
And we're probably still all saying it wrong, but I've just always called it Collis.
Like GIF and JIF. Like a,
yeah, well, I mean,
that shit straight.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I like to pair one of those Kaylee's optics with my Jizzly trigger. Anyways, guys, hey, it has been a blast, and I'm really grateful that Clark and Brian are here. We have some really cool stuff coming. Keep an eye out for all the data that we're putting out for the 6 Max. It should be available pretty damn soon. Like, I'm talking like in the next in days. From if you're watching this, we're days away. Kyle, what do you got, man?
That's about it, man. Yeah, just keep an eye out for barrels. We'll definitely start pushing them out there as soon as we can. And we've got a lot of that are done, just waiting on coating at the time, getting black oxide. So they should be coming in here soon. And it's just been slow going. We're actually having a bunch of custom barrel extension made, but all these are being done one at a time, custom. So it's taking a little longer than we hoped, but we'll speed it up for the next batch for sure. So,
yeah, guys, and a part of the delay too is the fact that like this year we've developed so many new and cool things that we're excited to like put forth. That, you know, if all we had to do was focus on this, we probably could have gotten it done a little bit sooner. But there's a lot of neat stuff. And by the way, all this stuff complements each other, right? We talked about this before, where, you know, pairing that barrel with a rail of that rigidity and, like, you know, addressing deflection with an upper like that and yada, 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 yada. And all of these things were built, you know, not in a vacuum. They were built to complement each other. And that in the final product, when it's all said and done, is fucking their hammers. So, all right, guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks for joining us today right here at the Liberty Tree Studio. But be sure to visit us at solgw.com for hard-use blasters, badass swag, and much, much more.